Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. Welcome back, Colin.
Hello. Hello, Phil. Hello, Kevin.
Absolutely. So the company recently announced that Altrius Consulting completed a second stage review of pre-concentration options for the Bushranger project in New South Wales, Australia. While the racecourse mineralization isn't suitable for TOMRA ore sorting, methods like pre-screening, gravity separation and coarse particle flotation show promise. Tests are underway at ALS in Perth and Novacell, with results expected in 2 to 3 months. Previous studies indicated Bushranger's economic viability at copper prices above $10,000 per tonne. Positive test outcomes could lead to a reassessment of the project's break-even copper price, enhancing its viability amid the anticipated copper supply shortage. Do you want to just give the listeners a bit of a breakdown on that latest RNS we just alluded to there and what it means for the economies of scale at Bushranger?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the drill results, and if you study the borehole results, was amazing in sort of population of samples in around about the 0.24 situation when 0.35 makes a mine. So, you know, when you're talking about these porphyries, it shows how subtle the grade and, you know, what makes a mine and what doesn't make a mine. But we're blessed as well with, you know, with that high-grade portion, which definitely does make a mine. Probably will last 6 years in any projected mine. TOMRA, I mean, actual fact, did show that the ore body is amenable to probably ore sorting. It was very rudimentary. And a study of the mineralogy, study of the distribution of chalk, pyrite, bornite, and whatever you in the system, the host rock, the presence of pyrrhotite being very, very predominant and important in the system, did lead the review team, the review consultants, to say, look, you know, other methods might be more successful. So let's step off from the first round. The first round, pretty sort of general test work as a contribution to a first pass assessment of whether the Bushranger would or would not make it as a mine, gave us a break even of about $10,000 copper. Now, with all we're talking about copper, you know, the ranges are, I mean, let's face it, some of the ranges are outrageous. When people are talking about 20 and 30,000 copper, that's daft. It really is. But I think to be talking about sustainable 11,000-12,000 ton copper isn't. And when you talk about a review of, shall we say, the next generation of copper porphyries, Phil, there's not many of them. You can count them on one hand. And some of them are pretty challenged when it comes to jurisdiction. I mean, Chile, you know, Latin America is not the easiest place to work nowadays. When you look at Panama, for example, Central America, when you look at Chile, the leader has turned down, I think, the last four applications. A lot of bad news emanating from governments. Environmentalists who really don't want mining, just really don't mining. That's the reason they're given in Panama, just don't want mining in their region. So there are no new mines. Then when we look at the projection being from 25 million tonne a year up to 30, up to 35 million tonne a year, gee, where's it coming from? And, you know, I go back to, and this sounds like I'm blowing my own trumpet. You know, I did sort of talk about this copper mission in as far back as 2017. And I have been talking since 2020 about the day of the small miner is back, or certainly, Phil, the day of the medium-sized miner is back, because these large pop porphyries, A, nobody's found any, B, the political challenges, but C, they need $3 billion, 15 years to bring into production. So, you know, it is extremely important that new discoveries are found. And, of course, while you're doing this and dusting off existing projects means there are a few and not many Bushrangers knocking around in the world. So a project with a break-even of 10,000, which will lend itself to upgrading, which has got an high-grade portion, which we never optimized that high-grade portion, whether we blended it, whether we worked it for the first years to get our money back. All sorts of options, commercial and corporate, they were never really studied in any great detail. All everybody was interested in is, do we sell it to Anglo? And of course, we just decided as a company to keep drilling in order to hope that Anglo or somebody would buy it. I mean, we knew that it's open-ended in every direction, and we've got 1.3 million tons of copper if we include the Ascot. Better to stop and take stock, which we did. And then, of course, along came the news of the last 2 or 3 months, and we took more stock and decided, well, let's, you know, in the interim, we'd add this assessment of our ore sorting capability. we decided to sophisticate it and go into phase two. And then, you know, if anybody wants to say, oh, well, Colin, you know, he's quite good at changing his mind. It was fairly categoric at various meetings and podcasts he's been on that his emphasis is the Northwest and other parts of Zambia. We've got this project the shareholders paid for. We drilled 35,000 meters in 2.5 years, which was a major achievement. Only one hole failed to mineralization. And suddenly that project has come into play. So I think the board can be forgiven for committing between $60,000 and $80,000 to take it to the next form, next place of assessment. We're not, you know, we're not spending $1 million on this. No, we're not even spending $100,000 on this. And it will take us to a position where we can rework, assuming the numbers work, of course, assuming there is sorting method, we get the optimum sorting method or somewhere near it. Then we rework the numbers. And guess what, Phil? What happens if we do a bit of optimization of the mining? And that break-even price comes down to 9.2, say. And you've got an ore body which is completely open-ended. So 0.24 could be 0.27 in some places, could be 0.35, who knows. But certainly that mineralization has been remarkably consistent over quite big lengths. So I think we're doing our shareholders best service. We're not jumping around like butterflies. You know, ooh, copper's up, let's go running back to bush for it. We're certainly not doing that. It's a natural progression. It's 60 to 80,000 progression, and we'll have some results that we can work with to revalue the Bushranger project. And who knows, over the next few months, there may be those who want to talk to us, you know. And there's many ways, the many ways our shareholders can benefit from this. We can monetize it, we can list it on its own, we can list it alongside of the other projects. We can do all sorts of things, Phil. But so Bushranger still sits as a marginal project, one of the biggest in, certainly the biggest in Australia, one of the biggest in Australia, one of the biggest in the Lachlan Fold, the biggest find since the Newcrest mine, you know, 50 miles from Sydney. So you talk about jurisdictional risk, that doesn't exist. You talk about a very large porphyry, which is open-ended, that does exist. Talk about an high-grade portion, that does exist. Talk about the fact that we've identified forms of upgrading, which will bring the ore body into play, should, because of it lowers the price for break-even. Surely the board are doing the right thing for its shareholders.
The interesting thing, Colin, when you talk about grades here, is if this project was in Zambia, they wouldn't even look at it. Obviously, it's a different type of project, being porphyry. But because it is in Australia, it's got to be seen as a prime asset.
Yeah, porphyry is much sought after. And, you know, there's a reason for that as well, Kevin, is their simplicity. It really is dig and treat, dig and treat, dig and treat. You know, mining skills aren't as available as there was 25 years ago. Do a scan of how many universities are still issuing out mining degrees, you know, far and few between. So mining has sort of moved at the top end from being mining to being civil engineering. So these porphyries are in much demand. Like you say, you can't start comparing Bushranger with Northwest with Silver King. You're just talking about totally different kettle of fish. Porphyries are well sought after because they're easy. Porphyries are recognized that to pass muster, they've got to be 1.5-2 million tons of copper. You've got to be mining at 20 to 30 million tons a year. So they're a totally different animal. You're absolutely right.
So tell us, you know, again, if we look at the market capitalization of Extract, which a market cap of £7.25 million. So what do people get for this £7.2 million? I mean, obviously, well, we've just talked about Bushranger.
They've got five licenses, which is in a trend from Kamoa and Western Foreland trend, which spreads all the way down to Angola from Kamoa in the Congo. Spreads right through the licenses that Extract holds in the Western Forelands. And those licenses are basically held in high esteem. So much so, 4 years ago in 2019, an offer of $1 billion was turned down for 35% holding in what was no more than moose pasture because it had no drill holes in it. So really, when you think about it, they've got prime position in a number of licenses, and we're working, we're actually up there now. We won't be very long before the rigs are turning. So they've actually got prime position there, in which is extremely valuable ground, whichever way you look at it. So you can't have that ground twice, so that is extremely important. And when you start start talking about people paying a billion for a third, and it puts into perspective just how valuable the region is. So the chances of Comoran-style mineralization are very high. You're talking about the Silver King. You've seen Silver King. That is a very nice project. Silver King has got the big breccia pipes, certainly one big breccia pipe where you're reporting grades as high as 50% over a meter, but 5.7%, I think it is, intervals. And the pipe, again, is open-ended, and there's another pipe 800 meters away and stopped work in between. So that's very valuable as well. So when you think about it, we positioned in Africa, in Zambia, Extract, to be the company with the best licenses. And boy, have they got the best licenses. There's a mine what butts up to the Silver King, which has been just purchased by the Chinese. They want feed. You've got the Northwest, which is much sought after. And we'll have interested parties, I know, to either joint venture, do what they do. And as you say, we've got Bushranger. We're positioned in this big new copper world I talk about all the time. You know, about probably people are getting me tired of me talking about, but we're extremely well positioned in this big new copper world. So
and
you get a lot.
How you
get a lot of
this
potential.
From?
Well, as you know, we sold the Manica project, so we've got cash in the bank. We get our quarterly payments. We had a payment at the beginning of June, and I think that was $750,000. That was in the bank. So the whole idea was to sort of monetize the gold in a situation where we were not exactly the decision makers, to divert that cash flow into finding a major copper resource which we could turn into account for our shareholders. That was the mission and stays the mission. So that's how we're going to fund it, by diverting our the Manica gold mine. So we get our quarterly payments, $750,000, and then I think at the start of next year, there's payments due for when they make the decision to work the sulfides, the deeper material, Manica.
Very good. I mean, we visited the Silver King. It's obviously already an open pit there. You know, certainly the grades in that seem sort of in terms of copper for the world, sort of off the chart, with also extremely high silver content as well, hence the name Silver King. And who was it that had that project before? Because we did see some holes drilled in that when we were there.
I think Glencore were there. And of course, it was a smaller project in those days because the adjoining in session had been mine site has been sold to Sino. We have actually got the benefit of a much larger concession because BHP were there as well. And BHP were somewhat constrained by a smaller concession. So we've multiplied by quite a bit the size of the concession. And now it goes all the way up to Kuya. So we've got a big concession to work, two pipes. But of course, we're pinning much of our sort of aspirations on the fact that it's not zero grade dilution between the pipes, but it's a stop work. And so, you know, instead of going underground and almost mining like those stop works, those pipes like kimberlites, you know, like diamond mining, they in actual fact will form one big open pit. And that's what we're open. If not, then of course we'll chase some ground so far, and then you're working chalcocite, very high grade chalcocite, with a small operation. And Extracts made no secret of the fact that they are looking for high quality and low annual production projects, which are lucrative and will keep the tin full to finance, hopefully, the discovery of major projects in the copper space.
Yeah, just to let people understand the Silver King a little bit, we were there. It's an open pit already, even though a smaller open pit, and obviously there's workings underground. Tony from Cooper Lemon had actually said he's been underground and there's workings and tunnels there. So it's not a case of it's not there. It, you know, the coppers, they think the pit is going to be expanded. Drilling will probably take place to make sure that it actually goes out. But it is a high-grade pipe, but a huge amount of copper, and obviously in this case, silver has come up out of the ground. So it's really, really very interesting project.
Yeah, it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I keep saying to Martin and the team, oh, so, you know, this material came up from underground, you know, from the mantle down there and form this pipe, how deep will the pipe be? But the supposition now is this was a kind of a deep hole during the, you know, the deposition and lava times. And so the fluid flowed in there from the surface and filled these up. So nobody's got any way now of telling how deep they go. No knowledge whatsoever. And the chances are, with the heavy stuff falling to the bottom, they could actually grade up. But the fact that they're not sourced down up, but sourced up down, might in actual fact lead to great concentration at depth. And then whether they open up to former old river channels, we don't know. So the chances of them thickening, are not, you can't dismiss the chances of them thickening either, these pipes. So they're not going to be cylindrical, same diameter all the way. Anything could happen to them as they sort of peter out. They've often got a way of turning into a into a kind of a funnel,
There's
a funnel with an elongated base.
There's probably a lot of legacy shareholders, Colin, listening, thinking, well, this seems like a bit of a distraction from the likes, from Bushranger and Ascot. But are you confident that with, these Zambian assets that you've built up, Silver King, Kikuyu, and obviously the Northwestern licenses up there, the Kamoa, are you confident that these are going to become some of the flagship, as up there with what Bushranger was, not purported to be, but, what it was going to be initially?
Yeah, well, Bushranger had all the legs to be a major project.
Yeah.
The world's biggest in an area which has got actual mines within 100 kilometers west and north in a very reliable jurisdiction. And we got it for £1.25 million worth of shares. We gave it our best shot and we got 0.24 and every hole in mineralization except one, the eastern side, which basically we were testing out what was the eastern limit anyway. So we did it. We did what we had to do. And we're left with an open body, which is completely open-ended. We've got 1.3 million tons. We've discovered a second ore body, Ascot. We've got the biggest project in the Lachlan Fold, and there are still quite a few Australian companies working in the Lachlan Fold. So we had very high expectations. What I couldn't do, Phil, nobody in my team could do, and I don't know anybody in the world could do, was predict the difference between 0.24 and 0.35. That's subtle. But it's so subtle that 0.35 makes a mine. 0.24 makes it marginal. That's how subtle it is. And, we're talking about really very fine differences here. So isn't it sensible that we see, right, if you upgrade it from 0.24 to what you want to 0.35, 0.4, how much rock do you miss, give away? How much copper do you retain? And what does the overall economic fundamentals look like? So we're in what is a sensible, reasonable, technical, commercial process. It was never easy, Phil, and I don't think anybody will be as disappointed as I was when we worked the final numbers. But it's not something you can do en route. You cannot do it en route. You basically have got to go through your work, and then you crunch out your numbers, and you crunch them again, you apply new cutoffs, and then we tested them financially as well. So what we've got, I'll repeat myself, is a marginal project, holds its own at 10,000, it's got an PV of about 335 million at 11,000 copper. So it starts being into play when you can see absolute confidence in tomorrow's copper price. Now, as I've said in another podcast not long ago on your site, is that there's a real push pull. The Chinese don't want to see 10 and 11 and 12,000 copper. Very, very inhibitive to development. The cost of building a coal mine, but cost of building a mine now is up about 60 or 70%. So the economics of our industry has changed. The dynamics of our industry has changed. So there are more players out there. And the traders, the traders don't want to see it either, frankly, Phil, are going out of control. So every time you see that bust, that surge, 10,000, 10,002, 10,005, you'll see an equal pullback to 9,300. And that'll be going on for a year now until it becomes impossible.
Yeah.
Of course, the London warehouse stocks will speak for themselves. The fact that the Chinese can't get refined or to smelt and or to refine, and the truth will come onto the wall. And then all of a sudden, copper might have an artificial spike, which is not sustainable, i.e. 14, 15, which won't be sustainable. So quite frankly, since we finished the work at Bushranger, we didn't close the book and put it away in the cabinet and say, well, that was a dud, that was a good try, sorry, shareholders. We knew that our day would come. And the Bushranger's day would come, and Bushranger's day hasn't come yet, but it's on its way. It's on its way. And the work we're doing is both prudent and frugal. Frugal to the point of $60,000 to $80,000, but means an awful lot, the result does. Prudent to the fact that it identifies what is the new break-even cost when we plug it all into the computer and do some optimization on the high-grade mining. So it's not, certainly not diverting our exploration effort, 80,000. It won't even draw one hole at Silver King, let alone the Northwest. And the shareholders are getting their Bushranger project slowly advanced and kept on the radar screen, knowing that in the course of time, there will be interest in it. So that's where we sit. And it's not negating, it's not competing. I think Kevin summed it up. You really are comparing apples and oranges. You know, there's no comparison of portfolio body compared to a Silver King or to a Kamoa. And there's just no comparison between the two methods. I mean, a very small discovery of a Kamoa, you know, 60 million tons at 5%. What is it? 60 million at 10% would be 6 million tons of copper. So 5% is 3 million tons of copper. And that would be over quite a small area of strike field.
Yeah. I mean, are you confident that with this season of drilling, which you alluded to, is about to start, you know, the truth machine will start turning up in the Northwest, that, you know, where you've got African Pioneer, Extract, Galileo, you know, are you happy that by the end of this season, potentially one of those could prove up a district?
Yeah, a mine, I think is the best word, because the district has been proven. If it's, you know, because the architecture is there. You've got the plumbing, you've got the faults, you've got the salts, you've got the fronts, you've got everything what makes up Kamoa. But what you haven't got is anybody firing all through mineralization, Phil. And I've been, you probably think it cavalier and flamboyant in saying it doesn't really matter whether it sort of goes through mineralization or not. I don't think I'm being cavalier because, you know, we proved the concept, and we being First Quantum, quite frankly, you know, our partner with us, and we proved that the architecture is continuous. We proved that Western Foreland and the Fold and Thrust Belt is continuous. But we haven't fired an all through mineralization, Phil. That event, whether we do it or somebody else does it, is completely unlocking the Zambian story. And, you know, there's major interest in acquiring licenses which are not available in that area. So are we going to do it by, I firmly believe, by the end of this dry season? Last year was incredibly dry for Zambia, you know, they didn't really have a big wet season. I think by the end of this season, someone, one of the companies up there, and we're dominant, I mean, is going to fire an all through mineralization. And quite frankly, whoever does it will be transformational for them. Obviously, it won't transform First Quantum, a $17 billion company, but an $8 million company, one borehole through 5% over about 4 meters, which is what Kamoa is, will be absolutely transformational for that company.
Okay, well, Colin, obviously, we wish you luck on, you know, I hope you have a great season of drilling up there in that Northwest region. And we look forward to welcoming you back on in future episodes to talk wax lyrical about copper.
Thank you very much indeed. And I'm sure the copper story will wax lyrical for itself. And I'll just be doing a confirmatory exercise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, gents. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.